Good afternoon and welcome to From Where We Are, stories of news and culture through the lens of USC and Southern California. I'm Jordan Sheldon, coming to you live from Studio B in USC's Annenberg Media Center.
And I'm Taylor Mills, taking over for Stefan De La Guardia today. It's December 1st, our last Wednesday show of the semester. On today's show, elitist USC football fans, the Joseph Madison Crow Building, and what's on USC student Spotify Wrapped. All that and more from Where We Are.
But first, these news headlines from Arantxa Pena.
The first case of the Omicron variant in the U.S. has been detected in California. The CDC confirmed the case was detected in San Francisco after a vaccinated patient traveled back from South Africa. According to Dr. Fauci, the individual is currently under quarantine with rigorous contact tracing put in place.
All close contacts thus far have tested negative. The individual was fully vaccinated and experienced mild symptoms, which are improving at this point.
Today, the majority of the Supreme Court is leaning towards upholding a Mississippi state law that would restrict abortion after 15 weeks. Mississippi Solicitor General Scott Stewart defended the state law in court.
Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey haunt our country. They poison the law. They've choked off compromise. Nowhere else does this court recognize a right to end a human life.
The court made headlines last month by refusing to block the Texas law banning all abortions. What they decide for Mississippi's law could set a precedent for the future of Roe v. Wade. The 15-year-old shooter who killed four students at Oxford High School in Michigan has been charged with first-degree murder and terrorism charges. Police are still investigating the motive for Tuesday's tragic event. And that's all for today's headlines. Brandenburg Media, I'm Arantxa Pena.
In two back-to-back weekend football games, USC dropped the ball when it came to welcoming our opposing schools. In an attempt to partake in rivalry, Trojans crossed the line chanting offensive statements during the BYU game. Our reporter, Victoria Hunt, delves into the dark reality of USC's elitism.
USC is known for immense school pride. Just enter campus on any fall weekend and every square inch of open space is covered in tents and coolers by students and alumni tailgating for the big football games. Frat Row is filled with parties. Houses are decorated with flags in Cardinal Red game day attire. It is nothing new for USC students to don signs dissing the opposing team, especially UCLA, the university's biggest rival. But when exactly does rivalry go too far? For many students, that line was crossed on November 20th, when a few student houses hung offensive signs on their porches. The USC Surf House, famous for throwing concerts and tailgates, put a sign by the entrance of the house reading, "You can't afford us." Another student house's sign said, "Your dad works for my dad." According to the University of Southern California, 21% of students come from low-income households, and more than three-quarters receive financial aid. So why did someone think it was appropriate to brag about the fact that USC has such a hefty price tag? Aaron Lucid, a USC theater major, found the signs to be disturbing. She felt that they may have been made in good fun, but just layered on the stereotype of the University of Spoiled Children.
I thought it was embarrassing, and to use, like, reverse, like, daddy's money slogan was, like, really pathetic, and, like, I was really embarrassed that people, especially at that house, because I've had, like, very good interactions with people, like, at the Surf House, like, would put that up. I just think it's really, like, it's quite elitist and icky.
Nicole Guo is a graduate student in applied psychology, and she has mixed feelings about the issue.
I think when I first saw the posters, like, on the day during the game day, I was obviously, like, in the school spirit, so I initially probably laughed at it. But now I think afterwards I realized just how much sayings like that really exemplify that really negative stereotype about USC.
Trojans went further than hanging signs at the BYU game. Students in the stadium rallied grotesque expletives about the school's religious nature. The chant was incredibly offensive to the predominantly Mormon institution, and USC Athletics Department issued an apology on their Twitter, calling the chant distasteful and not aligning with Trojan values. when USC already has a reputation for being an elite school of rich students. These bad manners only feed into the negative exclusivity felt by other students and schools. In a statement made by USC Surf Team, they wrote that the sign was not representative of their organization's beliefs. We also reached out to the athletic department, but have not received a comment yet. If you would like to read more about this issue, go to annenbergmedia.com for a fully detailed article. For Annenberg Media, I'm Victoria Hunt.
What are ways in which sports stadiums impact our environment? Chloe Clark has the story.
Joining approximately 140 other sports stadiums in the United States, the NFL's largest, SoFi Stadium, opened in Inglewood, California last year. But is bigger necessarily better? Stadiums can have negative environmental impacts. From construction to transportation, venues like SoFi can impact our Earth with air pollution and waste disposal. We learn about sports stadiums' negative impacts, but also the ways SoFi Stadium in particular has been able to push towards creating a greener game.
Fans are coming and going from a stadium. And when we think about the environmental impact, that's the number one factor, because it's the transportation to and from facilities that is by far the leading contributor.
SoFi can hold up to 100,000 fans, so there's no doubt they're part of this environmental equation. Casper did a study to see just how big of an impact fans make.
You have a lot of cars entering pretty much all at the same time. And then most importantly, where we found the pollution issues was exiting at the same time. So when a game ends, and that creates a huge amount of pollution in a very short amount of time.
Fans contribute to the footprint, but what about the stadium's physical construction?
The negative aspects just relate to the sheer infrastructure and operations that it takes to run any large facility, period. Not just the actual materials, but you're talking about the construction vehicles and the gas and equipment and all that stuff that relates to the actual construction process.
Like Casper says, concrete and steel are essential materials when building stadiums. With SoFi now the largest NFL stadium at 3.1 million square feet, approximately 40,000 cubic yards of concrete went into that construction.
You might be taking away green space that ordinarily might have been there, which is never a great thing to do.
Despite the negative impacts, stadiums like SoFi are making positive environmental footprints as well. For example, SoFi's roof was built with energy savings in mind from green construction and sustainable materials.
The landscape design that goes into it has become a lot more thoughtful about how they think about their environmental impact overall.
One other big push over the years has been the use of LED lights over fluorescent lights. SoFi now holds the most LED lights in any sports or entertainment venue.
LED lights, first of all, they're much more efficient. They don't let off heat, makes them a lot more just energy efficient overall. From an environmental sustainability point of view, they are 100 times more efficient than the traditional older light bulb.
Changes can be made. We're starting to see more professional sports departments put sustainable practices in place. From the NHL's Green Initiative to the Atlanta Falcons' energy-efficient Mercedes-Benz Stadium, sports organizations and stadiums are capable of truly changing the game. For Annenberg Media, I'm Chloe Clark.
USC is a top school, but the environmental policies made by the university are less than impressive when compared to other campuses in California. How are students taking steps to embody a green lifestyle? Here's Esther Quintanilla with the story.
When you step onto the university park, you can just feel how fresh campus is. It's green and it's bright. That first breath after you've completed your Trojan check just feels clean. But how clean is it? USC's 2020 sustainability report revealed the university reached most of its environmental goals. The university reduced more than a third of its greenhouse gas emissions, expanded recycling programs, and sold food from local businesses. USC also wanted to reduce the amount of waste that was recycled or composted, but there was only a slight improvement. some Trojans, like Sundiata, believe the university can do more to be eco-friendly.
I mean, USC is a very powerful institution, and just the fact that it's not known for sustainability itself, that's not one of the things that you think about when you think of USC, so they probably for sure can do more.
Some students, like Sierra Dagg, have noticed that the school hasn't been proactive in their promises.
I've noticed in the dining halls, they envision, like, Trojans don't waste, envision yourself a waste-free campus. But then, like, they have us using, like, plastic or paper plates, and then we have to throw all of the food that we didn't finish eating away rather than compost it.
Diada thinks the university has the resources to do more, but hasn't prioritized sustainability.
I don't know how much USC is actually doing its part as such a big institution, and I'm curious about how much aesthetic is given more attention than actual sustainability, and that includes the effects that the campus has on the region outside of the campus as well. Mm-hmm.
Yuan Hu says there needs to be more resources available on campus to make real change.
Some parts, I think, could be improved. At the water bottles, I don't see as many fountains like other school had that just allowed you to like put your water bottle there and like to refill.
Though students haven't seen any real improvements, there have been a few along the way. USC made Princeton Review's Green Colleges list for the first time last year, but its sustainable efforts are not as impressive as others in the state. Loyola Marymount has most of its energy coming from solar panels, and Stanford committed to reach carbon neutrality by the end of the decade. Another achievement happened earlier this year. The Sustainability Tracking, Assessment, and Rating System gave USC a silver rating, which the Chief Sustainability Officer, Mick Dalrymple, said was higher than they were initially expecting. Even though USC hasn't made any major changes, students like Dagg and Diada have taken the steps to practice sustainability in their own daily lives.
I've also started going plastic-free slowly, like one at a time. Like instead of using plastic containers that have soap and conditioner and shampoo, I use soap bars.
I try to. You know, I recycle, I garden, I compost. Yeah, and it all kind of just a part of my daily life.
But this is just the beginning for Green Trojans and USC, as there's still a lot more work to do for a more sustainable campus. For Annenberg Radio News, I'm Esther Quintanilla.
The Los Angeles chapter of the Lightspeed Saber League practices Wednesday nights at the Mike Bikes in Mid-City. Everyone's welcome at this fencing meets Star Wars event that's played all over the country. Their sabers glow in the dark just like in the movies, and sometimes they make sounds too. Team captain Tony Zaldúa helps train the squad. Tony Zaldúa Jr., that is. He describes the sport and introduces a few team members in this sound portrait.
The Force is with you, young Skywalker.
My name is Tony Zaldúa Jr.
You are not a Jedi yet.
And I am the captain of the Lightspeed Saber Los Angeles base, known as the Crate Base. Lightspeed Saber fighting is a little different than your typical sword fighting style. It's more like fencing. To be a strong competitor, you have to be fast, you have to have great defense, so you have to fake a lot. Meaning you strike one way and then you change the direction to get another target. The best fighters fake the best. Our team crew members, they come from various backgrounds. In the style of Rafael Estrada, they call him Rafi. He fights like Yoda. Every time I fight him, he's bouncing around, moving around, jumping around. William Alonso, he's an attacker. He'll come at you like a charging bull. And he'll tap his blade on the ground to intimidate you and try to throw you off. He's offense like probably 99% of the time.
My name is William Alonso, and I've been with Lightspeed since like 2016. I used to scream a lot while I attacked.
Kang Snow is he's the CEO, he's the founder. He's the supreme leader in Star Wars terms.
My name is Kang Snow. George Lucas came up with a really cool new iconic name, the lightsaber, and he also did what he thought made sense, which was if it's really an energy weapon, and it comes out of a beam of a crystal, then you can't have Quillens. Quillens are the apparatus around the hilt that protects your hand. When Obi-Wan Kenobi says it's an elegant weapon, I think that's what he meant. It has no extraneous parts on it, and that's elegance.
Sophia Fernandez produced that sound portrait for Annenberg Radio. I'm Jordan Sheldon. We're glad you're with us for From Where We Are.
And I'm Taylor Mills. It's 15 minutes past the hour. Coming up, naming the Joseph Madison Crow Building, and some students are shocked about the top songs in our Spotify Wrapped. I know I am. Stay with us.
The Center for International and Public Affairs has a new namesake. Joseph Medicine Crow, the Crow Nation's last war chief and a Native American historian who received his master's degree from USC. Wilco Martinez Cajero spoke with his son, Ron Medicine Crow, about his father's legacy and the renaming of USC's iconic buildings.
The Center for International and Public Affairs is one of the most eye-catching buildings on the USC campus. It stands out above the rest, literally, with a globe perched atop its tallest tower and, for years, the world flags that lined its hallways. After a search that lasted more than a year, Native American historian and USC alum Joseph Medicine Crow was selected as the center's new namesake from a pool that included more than 200 names. USC President Carol Folt explains that the university was in no rush to rename the building.
But, you know, we were taking our time. We wanted to reach out to a lot of people in the community. We really took time. It means something to ask someone if you can put their name on a building.
Toke Thompson, an anthropology professor at USC, played an important role in the renaming process through support letters and conversations with the school community.
This is kind of my little brainchild here. The name of Chief Joseph Medicine Crow just really leaped out at me. Ever since I came to USC 15 years ago, I've been working very hard at trying to increase Native American representation. So when something like that happens, that was a happy day.
Medicine Crow was the Crow Nation's last war chief. He enrolled at USC in 1938 and graduated with a master's in anthropology. In 2003, he received an honorary doctorate from USC. His son, Ron, did not expect to hear from the university after that.
Since the time he received his honorary doctorate, we figured, well, that's just about the last of what we'll hear from USC. But as it turns out, even the greater good news and honor came his way. My children and myself and my wife and my sisters were very, very surprised and very happy.
The center was previously named for Rufus von Kleinschmidt, USC's fifth president who was a significant and early supporter of eugenics. The USC Board of Trustees Executive Committee unanimously voted last June to remove von Kleinschmidt's name from the building. Students had previously petitioned USC for this change. Reagan Kirby, an executive board member of the Native American Student Assembly, believes the building's new name is a good start.
The way that the university is using the renaming is in a positive light. It's showing that it's because of their appreciation for not only the culture, but for Joseph himself.
In addition to Crow's name on the building, USC is also launching a scholarship program for Native American students. Joseph Medicine Crow got his master's from USC while on scholarship, as his son Ron recalls.
It was arranged by his uncle, Robert Yellowtail Sr., who was a superintendent of the Crow tribe at the time and former chairman. Robert had a lot of pull there at USC.
Yellowtail knew USC's president and was aware that the university offered scholarships to Native American students, such as Crow. USC's new program could feature up to 5 scholarships. More details are yet to be announced, but Kirby says this was a long time coming.
You know, almost all other, like, minority identities and stuff have had that for decades now. And the fact that we weren't recognized as someone that could, or, like, an identity that could get that financial compensation until now, is just kind of shocking.
Ron hopes the scholarships will inspire Native Americans across the country to pursue a college education like his father's.
I'm sure they'll be inspired to follow the example and they'll be inspired to come to USC, go to USC as a place where Native Americans are more than welcome.
A celebration for the center's new namesake will happen in the spring semester. For Annenberg Media, I'm Wilco Martinez-Cachero.
The names Gilbert and Jackie Cisneros are displayed on the Annenberg Media Center assignment desk. On today's Trojan Tales, Jamila Hammond reveals the backstory.
I feel like in actuality, I may have put that out into the universe.
That's Jackie Cisneros. Her name is on the Annenberg Media Center assignment desk. Back in 2010, I worked with her on the assignment desk at KNBC. We worked the dreaded overnight shift.
The desk is where all the information comes in to a newsroom.
That's David Reese, former KNBC assignment desk manager.
Whether it be from the public or from the police or from the wire services or whatever, we are 99% of the time the first to know something's going on.
David has remained friends with Jackie since we all worked together at the ranch, our nickname for Channel 4 News. Jackie was a freelancer, so she only got work when the station needed her.
You're always thinking about, you know, the next week or the next gig. And so there's some anxiety that goes with that.
I was not budgeted to have her on the desk, but she needed to eat. So I told her, okay, I'm going to schedule you, but I'm going to schedule you overnight. So I'm going to hide you on the desk in plain sight on the overnight shift. You know, and Jackie's a good person. And, you know, her husband had lost his job recently.
Adjusting to the overnight shift meant going to bed earlier, which turned into figuring out what she and her husband would have for dinner.
He didn't want Kentucky Fried Chicken. And then I was like, well, then you're on your own because I'm going to bed. I'm getting my Kentucky Fried Chicken and then I'm going to bed. I'm tired. I got to go to sleep.
Gilbert decided on L&L Hawaiian Barbecue. And while he was there, he bought 10 lottery quick picks. The next morning, Jackie got to work 30 minutes late. Everyone in the newsroom was joking that she had won the jackpot because the winning numbers came from her hometown.
I'm the only one that lives in Peak Rivera. And I have been around and worked at 3 TV stations at that point. Like people knew I lived in Peak Rivera.
Jackie learned that the winning number came from L&L Hawaiian Barbecue. And it dawned on her that when she woke up in the middle of the night, that she remembered finding teriyaki sauce and rice from Gilbert's dinner on the counter.
So I called him at 2:45 in the morning and said, where'd you get for dinner?
Grab those tickets. Let's go.
She told Gilbert to find the lottery tickets.
First, I tell him the mega number, which was 8. I always remember 8. The rest of the numbers I don't remember so much, but I remember the 8. And he goes, okay, I've got 2 of them with 8. So then I start reading the numbers and he kept going,
Jackie continued to read the numbers to Gilbert as the newsroom watched her in anticipation.
Finally, I said all the numbers and he's like, I think we won.
Last night here, we told you about a member of our own NBC family who struck it rich.
They won a whopping $266 million. One of the first things they did with their winnings was to establish the Gilbert and Jackie Cisneros Foundation. Its goal is to increase the education level of Latino students.
That has been transformational for a whole family. And it's awesome to see. I'm going to get all teary-eyed because it's really awesome to see. And that will be impactful, but not for just them and their siblings, but then their kids.
They also donated to each of their alma maters. Jackie went from being in the first Annenberg graduating class to now contributing a $500,000 donation to get their names on the centerpiece of the newsroom, the assignment desk.
I felt like it was so perfect. Like this, I went to SC and I'm going to be in the middle of it. And that's, you know, I can only afford this. I can only afford to have it named after me because I won as an assignment editor.
Jackie continues her work as president of the Gilbert and Jackie Cisneros Foundation. As for her husband, he is now former Congressman Gil Cisneros of California's 39th District. Working with Jackie, she often wished that she would win the lotto. This just goes to show that dreams do come true. For Annenberg Media, I'm Jamila Hammond.
Ugh, the Instagram stories with the Spotify Wrapped, it's so exclusive to me as an Apple Music user. I feel like I'm really missing out on something.
Yeah, well, you can hate from outside of the club. I'm currently in the club and I'm a little bit embarrassed about what I found out about what I listened to this year, you know.
Oh, Really?
Yeah, it just kind of tells the story of a girl down bad a little bit, you know?
Oh, well, maybe I'm thankful that Apple Music doesn't have its version of a Spotify Wrapped, because maybe I'd be a little bit embarrassed,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's an emotional roadmap you kind of don't want to go on.
Yeah, well, Grace O'Neill did a story on Spotify Wrapped.
Yeah, for music listeners, well, Spotify listeners. It is truly the most wonderful time of the year. This application released their yearly Wrapped feature for users to check out what their most listened to songs were. Grace O'Neill has this story.
Every year, Spotify users open the greatest gift of all, which is a curated playlist of their most listened to music over the last year. It shows your top song and artist and gives you a personalized playlist of your most listened to songs. Let's find out what some of USC's students' top songs of the year were.
It was Peaches by Justin Bieber. I'm a little bit underwhelmed. I wish it was more fun.
My number one song was Better by Khalid. I was kind of surprised because I feel like I only listened to it for a week. Just a lot that one week.
All right, bad, 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 little baby.
Top song was actually the Ted Lasso theme song. Okay. So like the main song of Ted Lasso, okay. Yeah. It's kind of a random one because I played it a lot. I like got really into the show and like I then liked the song. And so I just had it in like multiple of my playlists.
Do Mali Mali. I thought I had listened to other songs more than that. Okay. And honestly, it's like not even a song I really like that much anymore. So it's kind of sad to see there.
Now that you've heard from these USC students, have you looked up your Spotify Wrapped yet?
Once again, that was reporter Grace O'Neill. The story featured voices of Kaylin Sue, Jasmine Liu, Mihir Singh, Keegan Strawn, and Nick Buxbaum.
And now we have a message from my co-host that is not with us today right now. No, he's alive and well, but he's not with us today right now.
Stefan.
Hey, Annenberg Radio crew. It's Stefan coming to you from Atlanta. Unfortunately, I'm absolutely gutted that I'm not there for the final show today. But just want to say, Taylor, thank you for filling in for me, Boots, today. You did an excellent job. I also want to give a thank you to everybody throughout the semester, to people like Derek, Arohi, Spencer, Guilherme, Austin, Celine, Paulina, and everybody else who's made this transition a beautifully smooth one for me in my first semester at USC. You know, I couldn't have done it without you guys, and this has just been incredible this semester. And I cannot thank you all enough for everything you've done for me. And, you know, like I said, I'm just so heartbroken that I couldn't be there today, but you know, happy holidays to you all. I wish you guys safe travels and just a great end to the semester for everybody. And hopefully we all get to see each other very soon. So thank you guys just for everything this semester. Really appreciate it.
That was so sweet.
Oh, Stefan, well, we're definitely missing you right now, even though love my hey. Co-host that I have right now with me.
Yeah. I bet you have FOMO. I would too, but you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all we have for you today on today's From Where We Are. Arohi Sheth, Spencer Klein, and Guilherme Guerrero produced today's show. We also got help from Polina Sherazova.
Polina Sherazova is our technical operator, and Derek Renfro composed our theme music. We are also streaming live on KXSC. Follow at kxsc.org/listen and on YouTube at Annenberg Radio News.
And you can subscribe to From Where We Are on Apple Podcasts. Also, if you're looking for more news, be sure to download Annie, Annenberg's news app, and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Annenberg Media. I'm Jordan Sheldon.
And I'm Taylor Mills. From all of us at Annenberg Radio, wherever you are, we hope you'll join us again, maybe next semester, for
From Where We Are. And it's been a pleasure being a host this semester. So thank you all for listening in and letting me report for you all. It's been an honor.
Yeah, I'm usually on Mondays, but I was lucky enough to fill in and really get to see how this team works on today's show. And it's been a blast. So yeah, check in next semester. We'll see you around.
Thank you.